Welcome everybody to this part of the service. Welcome to our visitors. Hopefully you can feel at home. So I just want to say a few more words to what we were talking about earlier this morning, and I just want to say thank you, Nelson, for what the time and effort you put into preparing these lessons for Sunday school. It's needed. Like, we need that as a church. We need that as a body. And here's the thing. It doesn't matter how many times you heard it, you forget. And you need to be reminded again. So, to Barb, I just want to say you had the courage to speak up. And so I'm just going to I just want to ask the Spirit of God to release courage into you to walk where you feel that God wants you to walk. And it doesn't matter what your past looks like, and we don't even have to know. It doesn't matter what your past looks like. God can use you in spite of that. And I want to encourage you to walk where God is calling you, and don't let fear hold you back. So I have a question: how are movements started? Like when there's a movement, how's it started? As what? A dream, okay. A vision by a group of people? One person? That's what I've found, is that when a movement is started by a single person who has a dream, has a vision, and has a call on their life, and It doesn't come without fear. It doesn't say just because you're called to something that you're going to feel bold and ready to tackle this thing. There's fear associated with that. Amanda, you have a dream of public speaking. And I'm assuming it's not just because you want edification or you want to get in the public eye and you want publicity. I'm assuming that's not what it is. I think I know you that well. But did you ever think about that? So fear holding you back, fear what other people think. Did you ever think about that there's people who are missing out on what you had to share and what you have to offer because you're being held back by fear? And so maybe God's getting ready to start a movement. I don't know. But apparently it's going to wait until, or it's not going to happen unless you take that first step. So we're going to talk about someone who created a movement today. But that dream, having that dream, having that vision, there also comes a test with that. And so God sometimes tests you to see how serious you are about taking that step. Okay? Now, if you pass that test, he can take you to what he wants to accomplish. If you fail that test, it's probably not going to move forward. So we are going to talk about overcoming. Now, we as God's people are called to be overcomers. That's who we're supposed to be. Let me just ask you, if that's what you see across America today, when you observe the church, the mainstream church today, is that what you see? Do you see a culture, a society of overcoming? And I'll answer that question. I don't see it. And I see within Lancaster City, we have churches coming behind. We have churches coming behind sin. And that just boggles my mind. I don't understand that. Has the church become so blinded and so just wanting to be fit into society that we come along and we embrace sin? So I love that we are embracing a standard. We're talking about standards and that we're going to walk in that. I think it's key to staying on track with where God wants us to go. By the way, do you know that Way of Jesus exists today because of one man's boldness and courage to step out and move forward when it wasn't comfortable? and you think about where that went today. I mean, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here, but let's just use one event. Let's use LBS. Had it not been for one man's courage, LBS would not exist. Now, LBS did not stay contained. That concept did not stay contained to Lancaster. We have talked to multiple people across this country who are now implementing Bible schools, whether you want to call it Tuesday church, whatever, clubs, whatever, that's being implemented because of one man's boldness and courage to stand up for what he believes and to move forward where he felt God was calling him. That man is Steve King. I know he's not here today. But what... I'm sorry, I was not expecting to get emotional at all. I don't know where that came from. Sheesh. But movements are started by one person. I'll give you another example. Her name is Rosa Parks. Does that name sound familiar? She was part of she lived in the era where there was segregation. The blacks and the whites were separated, and in this particular case, the blacks had to move to the back of the bus. Rosa got onto the bus at the end of a long day's work. She was tired. There was one seat available behind the driver. She got in that seat, and she sat down. The driver asked her to move. She said, "I'm not moving." The driver said, "Okay, I'll call the police." Rosa said, "You can call whoever you want. This is my seat. I'm not moving." Rosa Parks started a movement. One person makes a difference. And if you think that you don't make a difference today by doing what God's calling you to do, you're wrong. You are wrong. Here's one way to determine whether God might be calling you in a certain direction, or to take care of a problem, or to fix something, or whatever it is. So if there's something that just really bothers you and bugs you, like we need to, I don't know, you could use anything. We need to reach out to the poor in our city. We need to provide shelter for the homeless. We need to be reaching out to more kids. We need to be reaching out to the immigrants in our town. Whatever it is, okay? If God's laying that on your heart, there's a good chance that he's nudging you and he's saying, "I want you to take care of that." And you know what most of us think? "I can't do that. It's too big for me. I wouldn't even know where to start." And so what do? Nothing. And that need is waiting to be taken care of until we step up. All right. So does the name Saddam Hussein ring a bell? Now I don't know, that's been a number of years ago, so there's probably people in here that name doesn't sound familiar, I don't know. Saddam Hussein was born in 1937. He was born in Iraq, and the circumstance that he was born into was very unfortunate. So his mom lost her husband. While she was pregnant with Saddam, she lost her husband and one of her sons to cancer. It drove her to a point of depression where she tried to abort her baby. And she tried to commit suicide. Was not successful with either of those. When Saddam was born, she didn't want anything to do with him. And so he ended up at his uncle's house and was raised by his uncle for the first 10 years of his life. When he came back home, after his wife had remarried, he was badly mistreated by his stepdad. So that's Saddam Hussein, okay? So let's move forward about 20 years and 22 years, something like that, and he was part of an attempted assassination. He was part of a coup who was attempting to assassinate the president, okay? Was unsuccessful and spent some time in prison over that period of time as well. Later on, he somehow snuck out of prison and again got involved in the powers of in politics, and in the 70s he rose to power. Okay, he was elected president of Iraq in 1979, and his goal was to influence the region of the Persian Gulf region, and he wanted to take over. That was his goal, eventually. So when we first started really hearing about, or when I first remember hearing about Saddam Hussein was in 1990 when he had invaded Kuwait. Okay, his goal was to take over the oil fields of Kuwait, and he needed to make money. He had a massive debt that he had to pay off, and his goal was to take that. Kuwait is a very small country. It's just a very small country, the tip of Iraq, and he's very rich, has some very rich oil fields. He was planning to take that over and use that to pay his debts off. So, in the process of all this rise to power, Saddam Hussein became what they refer to as a ruthless dictator. Okay, so he stopped at nothing to get to the point, to get to a place of power. So, just for example, when he was forming his cabinet, he would choose people who he knew were not loyal or who had some inkling of not being loyal. When he had his meetings, he would single them out. He would have them arrested, have them escorted. Later on, and he did this many times. Like as soon as he got any inkling or had an idea in his head that somebody was not loyal to his regime, he would lock them up, and then later on, he would have his loyal followers, the people that were loyal in his cabinet, he would have them execute them. So that was one thing he did. Another thing he did was he had a chemical, a nerve gas that he used very broadly when he wanted to get rid of a group of people. And when it wasn't just people from another country. It was people within his own cabinet, people that were opponents to him. It was family, it was whatever. Whatever he could do to rise to power, that's what he did. But over time, he killed hundreds of thousands of people, and even his son, you know, continued that pattern. And so he was kind of running wild in Iraq and doing what he wanted to do, killing people, taking advantage of people, and all under the protection of his dad. So this is where Saddam Hussein was. Well, after he invaded Kuwait, the U.S. came in, backed by the UN, and forced him back out again. So now he's forced out of Kuwait, and the next time that he got into trouble with the U.S. was in 2003, and that was when the U.S. invaded Iraq. So those things are fresh in, I mean, they're not fresh in my memory, but they're part of my memory. I remember these things. And so what we found as he was on the run, after the U.S. invaded Iraq, he was on the run trying to get away, trying to hide whatever he could. And he was successful for a while. His sons were found and killed, and there was other people that were part of his regime that were taken out of the picture, but Saddam Hussein was still on the run. Eventually, they did catch up to him, and they found him in a pit by an old farmhouse. Now, he wasn't the Saddam Hussein that we knew or that we saw in the news over that past decade. He was very disheveled, he was dirty, and he was very subdued. So he had completely lost his regime, completely fell from power, and not only was his regime taken out, but now he was captured and taken into captivity. Later, he was brought before an Iraqi panel, and they sentenced him to execution by hanging. So that was the life of Saddam Hussein. Now, I want to talk about somebody from the other side of things. So Saddam was a man who rose to power because of just by doing whatever he wanted to. He would kill, he would destroy, he would steal wherever he could. That was his agenda. So in Judges chapter 6, we have the story of another man. And this man also had a call on his life. So the man's name is Gideon, and he was growing up in an era where the Midianites were taking over the land of Israel. Now, what the Midianites would do is, so Israel would sow seed, and they would want to reap a harvest, but before the harvest happened, the Midianites would come up into the land of Israel, and they would bring their armies, they would bring their people, they would bring their stuff, and they would pretty much trample this. Here's what the Bible says about that. Is they brought up into the land of Israel their livestock, their tents, as numerous as locusts, and they had camels that were without number. There was more camels than you could number. So they would invade the land and pretty much destroy all the crops, and then the Israelites would be left with nothing to eat. So this is what was happening. Time and time again they do this, and the Israelites were getting sick of it. And here's this man Gideon, he's out back threshing his wheat. I don't know where he got his wheat, some leftover wheat, some field where he probably protected. So he's out there threshing this wheat, and he's in the same position. He's just sick of it. And so there's an angel showed up. The angel said, "You man of valor." And I like that because I just like what the angel called him there, because it was obvious that Gideon was already doing things that were, like, he was already stepping up and taking positions. And he was already just becoming a warrior. So the angel called that out in him. And then he gave him an assignment. He said, "You're the one who's gonna set the Israelites free." Okay, that was basically what he was saying here. So there came a day when God gave him an assignment. So one of the assignments that he was given is he was supposed to go and tear down the idol of Baal. So Israelites worshiping Baal at that period of time. Now God gives him an assignment, says, "You go and you tear down the idol of Baal." Now here's where Gideon could have said, "You know what? I don't know what my family's going to think about this. I don't know what I'm going to get in trouble for this. I mean, this is going to have some serious consequences. You're tearing down the Baal. You're going into the city. You're tearing it down. I'm going to get in trouble for this." All right. So what he did is he took 10 of his men at night. They did it at night because they didn't want to be seen. And so he took an offering with him as well. So what he was supposed to do is tear down the idol of Baal and then burn it and offer up these animals as a sacrifice. So that's what he did. He went out there at night, cut down the idol of Baal, offered the animals up as a sacrifice, and the next morning they came out there and was like, "What's going on here? Who did this?" And so they somehow they figured out. I don't think they had video cameras back then, but maybe they had. I don't know. But they knew it was Gideon. So Gideon got in trouble for this, and they came to his house and were going to destroy him. And his dad said, whoa, "Let Baal defend himself. If Baal is really that important, then you let him defend himself." So his dad kind of protected him from that. So Gideon passes the first test. God calls him to tear down the idol of Baal. He passed the test. He did it. Next thing, God says, in verse 34 of Judges chapter 6, it says, "But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Then he blew the trumpet, and the Abizarites gathered behind him." So this is just people of the children of Israel gathered behind him. There's about, after he blew the trumpet, a bunch of people showed up, and there's about right around 32,000 people showed up, okay? 32,000 warriors. And they're going to go against this Midianite army of innumerable warriors and camels and things that they had. They remember, they came up every so often to stomp on their land and just kind of take advantage of them, steal, kill, and destroy. That was their agenda. So now he has an army of 32,000 people. God says, "It's too many people, Gideon. Like, that's if you take 32,000 people down there and you annihilate the Midianites, they're going to think it's because of you and not because of me." So here's what he said. "Go out and tell everybody who's scared or afraid to go home? All right, we'll see how this works out. So after he did that, there was 20,000 of them went home. 20,000 of the warriors that gathered together to fight the Midianites, they went home. Now he's left with 10,000 people. And Gideon, can you just imagine? He's like, what am I going to do? So God says, it's still too many people. If you take 10,000 down there and you beat the Midianites, they're going to think it was you and not me. So he said, take them down to the water, and the men who lap the water like a dog, they're the ones who are going to go with you. So can you imagine going down to the water, taking these men down to the water, and Gideon's like, come on, please lap, as many as you can, lap. So somehow they separated those out. Somebody kept track of that, and there was 300 men left to go fight the Midianites. Now, at this point, Gideon's having second thoughts about this. He knows he was called. He knew this from the beginning. He knew there was a call of God on his life. It was confirmed by the angel, and then God called him later to do the test, and now he's supposed to go and fight the Midianites with 300 people. These people that were innumerable, they would come up and trample over their land with camels that were more than you could count. And so he was supposed to go fight these with 300 people. He was starting to feel a little doubtful. And so he decided he's going to put a fleece out and say, God, if you really want me to do this, this fleece is going to be soaking wet, but the ground is going to be dry. Well, guess what? The next morning, the fleece was soaking wet, so much so that he could squeeze water out of it. And he's still not sure about this, and so he says, one more time here. Let's try this out again. That could have just happened. Maybe that was just chance. That this fleece was wet and the ground was dry, that was just chance. Let's turn it around here. Give me a sign one more time. If the fleece is completely dry and the ground is soaking wet, then I know that this is what you want me to do. All right, tried it out. Next morning, ground was soaking wet. The fleece was completely dry. All right, now I gotta go. Funny thing is, Gideon was one of those people that was still scared. And God knew that. And so he said, if you're scared, if you're still scared, Gideon's like, are you kidding me? I'm petrified. If you're still scared, you go down, you sneak down, take one of your servants, and you sneak down to the camp, and you listen to what they're saying. Now, it just happened, as he snuck down to the camp that night, that one of the other guys was telling his friend a dream. And the dream was that a barley sheaf came rolling down the hill and rolled over their tents and destroyed the Midianites. So Gideon's listening to this conversation, and the other guy says, I can interpret that. I know exactly what that is. That's Gideon, the son of whatever his dad's name was. It's him. He's going to come down. He's going to destroy us. So Gideon heard that. He's like, all right, this is what we're going to do. All right, so now we got confirmation. We're going to destroy the land of, we're going to destroy the Midianites. And so now we have a battle plan, right? Okay, so this is what God, this wasn't a battle plan that Gideon came up. He didn't come up with this. The battle plan was to take torches, cover them up with some kind of glass jar, okay? So you have a torch, you have a glass jar, and you have a trumpet. And they're supposed to go to the top of the hill. And in the middle of the night, they're supposed to break the glass, hold their torches up, and blow the trumpet. Sound like a battle plan? 300 people against an army that is countless. Well, let's just see what happened here. So they do that. That night they go down. They go to the top of the hill. They break their glass. When Gideon blew the trumpet, they broke their glasses, held their torches up, and everybody blew the trumpet. So what happened next is the Midianites turned on each other. They thought they were surrounded by an army, and they turned on each other. And so it turned out that there was a great destruction in the land of Midian because of Gideon, because Gideon was willing to follow through. on what God asked him to do. Now, Gideon moved forward in spite of fear. All right, he was fearful. That's very obvious. God, I mean, it says here, he was still afraid. God said, if you're still afraid, go eavesdrop, see what they're saying. Gideon's like, I'm going. I'm afraid. So after he did that, after this happened, they pursued the Midianites, and that was when the children of Israel joined them, and there was a lot of destruction. So Gideon here is a just another example of a man who stood up for truth and for what's right, was frustrated with the Midianites who were killing, stealing, and destroying. Okay? So that was their agenda. Gideonites stood up and said, I'm not putting it up with it. God calls him, he's obedient, he does what God asks him to do, and there's a lot of lives that were saved. Israel got their freedom back again, and because of Gideon's boldness to go where God wanted him to go. I'm going to tell one more story. And this is about a man who was one of David's mighty warriors. Found in 1 Chronicles 11:22. I'm just going to read that. 1 Chronicles 11, verse 22. Actually, I'm going to back up a little bit here. In verse 20, Abishai, the brother of Joab, was chief of another three. Actually, I'm going to go back a little further here. What I want you to see here is the loyalty that these men had toward David. And David said with longing, oh, that someone would give me a drink of water from the well Bethlehem, which is by the gate. So the three broke through the camp of the Philistines. Those are three of his mighty men, three of David's mighty men, broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water from the well Bethlehem that was by the gate, took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, David would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, far be it from me, O my God, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of these men who have put their lives in jeopardy? For at the risk of their lives, they brought it. Therefore, he would not drink it. These things were done by the three mighty men. Now, that takes an enormous amount of loyalty for these guys to do what they just did. And he said, verse 20. Abishai, the brother of Joab, was chief of another three. He had lifted up his spear against 300 men, killed them, and won a name among these three. Of the three, he was more honored than the other two men. Therefore, he became their captain. However, he did not attain to the first three. Benaiah was the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man from Kabzeel, who had done many deeds. He had killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. He also had gone down and killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. And he killed an Egyptian, a man of great height, 5 cubits tall. In the Egyptian's hand there was a spear like a weaver's beam, and he went down to him with a staff, wrested the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. These things Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, did, and won a name among three mighty men. Indeed, he was more honored than the 30, but he did not attain to the first three, and David appointed him over his guard. Now, Benaiah here, I don't know, that's a warrior. I don't know how many of us guys would be willing to do what he did. Now, think about this. He killed an Egyptian, a man of great height, 5 cubits, which is 7.5 feet tall, and in the Egyptian's hand there was a spear-like weaver's beam, and he went down to him with his staff. He had a staff, and the guy, he went hand-to-hand combat with this guy, wrested the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. The other thing he did was kill two lion-like heroes of Moab. Now, these guys were probably just being pesky, and they were heroes. And so he goes down and he kills them. I don't know what's a lion like, but a lion-like man, that's what it says, lion-like heroes of Moab. And then he also killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. I don't know what kind of a man this guy was, but that's pretty incredible what he just accomplished. It's very interesting that we can talk about all this death and this gruesome stuff and this killing. I mean, this was part of their life. This is how they earned their stripes. But think about killing a lion in a pit. So I don't know what the situation was here. There's an entire book written about this. If you want to pick it up, it's written by one of my favorite authors. it's Mark Batterson, but the name of the book is In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. Yes, thank you. So pick it up, read it. It's a very good read. But so we don't know what all was going on here. But you can only imagine, this lion didn't end up in this pit for just no reason. Here again, the lion could have been a pest to the community, so they set up a trap. Maybe they set up a trap where he fell into, and now they didn't just let him in the pit. They weren't just going to take a chance of letting him in there. They actually were going to kill him. So who is the guy who offers to go down and kill him? It's Benaiah. And so he offers to go kill him, and it happens to be snowing that day. Now, how many of you know that fighting something in a pit when it's snowy does not sound like a very good battle plan? That doesn't sound like a good idea at all. But he did it, and he killed him. He won. One of the things that I want to point out with these stories and with these examples here is we have an enemy who's out there to kill, steal, and destroy. You and me are called to counteract that, and we're called to change the culture around us. Now, we all have stuff in our life that from time to time rears its ugly head. I don't know what it is. It could be what we talked about this morning. It could be gossip. It could be fear. It could be a whole host of different things. But we have things in our life. We're human, all right? We're not that inventive. We're not that creative. We don't keep coming up with new stuff. What's goes around has been going around for a long time. We think that some of the stuff that we hear of today is new. It's not. It's been around for many hundreds of years, but we have something. We have something in our life that keeps rearing its ugly head. I don't know what that is in your life, but sometimes we tend to take the approach that we just want to subdue it, okay? So we chase it away, whatever it is, and we're just okay with it, you know, just chasing it into its corner and letting it there. Here's what I think. As people of God, we should not be okay with just cornering something. We should annihilate it. We're called to annihilate it. We're not called to just chase a lion into a pit and let it there and give it a chance to come back out again. We're called to kill it, to take it out. We're not just called to go out into the Midianites and just let them run all over us. We are called to be powerful. We are part of an army that is supposed to be powerful, and too often we're backing away as if we don't have the power to do what we're called to do. We need some Benaiahs today. We need people who are willing to stand up for truth and for what's right. We need men who are willing to fight for their families. We need people who are willing to fight the enemy at any cost. Don't tell me that Benaiah didn't think that he could lose his life by jumping into that pit or by fighting that Egyptian that was 7.5 feet tall with a spear the thickness of a weaver's beam, which they tell me is about 2.5 inches thick. So that thing wasn't breaking anytime soon. Don't tell me he wasn't afraid to do that. Don't tell me there wasn't some fear involved when Gideon, we already talked about, there was fear involved. There was fear involved. With all these examples, it takes courage. You gotta have courage in order to push through, in order to be who God wants you to be, you have to have courage. And what is courage? It's moving forward in spite of being afraid. Okay? You're not powerless. You are created to be powerful. We're called to be overcomers. We're not just supposed to push the enemy back. We're supposed to annihilate the enemy. Whatever it is in your life that's keeping you from moving forward, you need to annihilate that thing. What are some traits of an overcomer? We talked about some of these, but these men exuded these traits. It was courage. It takes courage. You just can't get away from that. If you're gonna make a difference, if you're gonna stand up alone and say, "I'm not moving from my seat, I don't care who you call," it takes courage to do that. If God says you need a battle plan and here's your battle plan and it feels all out of whack, it doesn't feel right, and yet God's calling you to do that, that takes courage to do that. It takes loyalty. You're going to have to be loyal to a cause. You're going to have to be loyal to maybe it's a team, but you're going to have to be loyal to God first of all. You're going to have to be loyal, and when he calls you to do something, he's going to have to be able to count on you to move ahead and do that. It takes unity, and it takes teamwork. Daniel 11:32, the last part of that verse says, "The people who knew their God shall be strong, and they're going to do exploits." They're going to carry out great exploits. So there's a requirement to that too. If you want to be somebody who has courage and who makes a difference and who carries out exploits, you're going to have to get to know God. The people who knew their God, the people who know their God, shall be strong and carry out great exploits. I think it starts there. It starts when nobody else is looking. How are you? Are you connecting with God? Here's one. I think that's where every battle plan comes from. Gideon didn't start out he didn't start out by not having a relationship with God. It was obvious he had a relationship there. That was when the angel felt that he could move in and give Gideon an assignment. Do you know one of the things you're going to have to fight hardest against, or that's going to become really difficult? Maybe it's not for you. I don't know. It is for me. You're going to have to fight for that time to create that relationship with God. If you want to carry out, if you want a battle plan and you want to carry out any kind of battle, you want to do exploits, you want to be an overcomer, you're going to have to develop that. That for me is one. It's something that I've found. If I want it, I have to fight for it. And even when I fight for it, it seems like the opposition comes even stronger. But it's something you're going to have to develop. It comes at you from multiple different ways. Let's say you cut that time out of your day to have a connection with God. Well, pretty soon, that if you're not careful, that can just become a habit that doesn't go anywhere and you're not actually connecting. And so it takes work. It takes effort. It's hard work to create that space and that to develop that relationship. But what do you want to do? Do you want to go through life being powerful or powerless? Do you want to go through life doing exploits, or do you just want to cruise through life and be average? Do you want to be an overcomer, or do you want to be overcome? That's some of the things that's going to come out of that relationship. Everyone wants to be an overcomer, but nobody wants something to overcome. Like at the gym where I used to train for CrossFit, he used to say, "Everybody wants to be a beast until it comes to doing what beasts do." And I think that's just true. Everybody wants to be an overcomer, but nobody wants to overcome. It's hard. It's difficult to have the courage to face something. But do you want to make a difference? There's people that are waiting on you. There's a call on your life to make a difference. And if you're going to cower in fear and not move ahead, I don't care if it's what other people think, what other people have said, what the enemy's doing in your life, and you're being held back, there's one less piece to the battle plan of God that's not being carried out. And here's just what I want to speak over you, that you are a powerful force that is making a difference wherever you go. And when there's a call of God in your life, don't just cower back in fear, but move forward and take that enemy, take that hill, take that habit, take that thought, whatever it is, and conquer it. Be an overcomer. Don't just Don't just be okay with it just pestering you again and again, and you think you have it conquered, and then it rears its ugly head again. Take it out. Annihilate it. That's what God wants you to do. That's what the battle plan is for you today, is to go out and annihilate the enemies that are in your life. Don't just be okay with just swipe them to the side, but take them out. And here's the thing. When you take them out in your life, now you also give the power to other people to take it out. You become effective in helping other people accomplish that. Did you ever hear of the man who broke the 4-minute mile? They had concluded that if you would break the 4-minute, they had tried this for years, by the way. They had tried to break the 4-minute mile for years. They even tried having lions chase people just to see if they could break that 4-minute mile, and they had finally concluded that it's impossible. Until, I don't even remember the guy's name who did it. Until he did it, he broke the 4-minute mile, and it was only a few weeks later that somebody else broke his record. And we've been breaking records ever since. I don't know, we've been matching that anyway. 4-minute mile is not a big deal. They had concluded there were studies that were concluded that if you would break the 4-minute mile, you would be insane. Now, because somebody stepped up and did it, now it just builds belief in other people that they can do it too. So whatever it is in your life that you have to overcome, you're going to build other people's belief. You're going to build other people's understanding of what can be accomplished. So go out and conquer the enemy in your life.